everyone, and welcome to this new episode of A Walk in the Wild Side, a veterinary podcast. This podcast is designed to educate veterinary professionals and other animal lovers on all things wildlife, zoo, aquatic, and exotics. I'm your host, Kyle Gainsman, a fourth-year veterinary student at Michigan State University. Today, we'll be doing something a little different, and I'll be talking with two other incredible veterinary students about diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, in veterinary medicine, and how DEI is changing in vet med. The episode is broken into separate interviews with each of my guests, allowing for each person to highlight their experiences and discuss important information in regard to diversity, equity, and inclusion within veterinary medicine. Joining me for this episode is Floyd Williams Jr., a fourth-year veterinary student at Purdue University, and Hera Bossett, a fourth-year veterinary student at the University of Florida and co-founder of the Association of Asian Veterinary Medical Professionals. So, let's get started, and first up is Floyd. Hey Floyd, it's great to have you on this episode of A Walk on the Wild Side. So just so listeners know, Floyd helped give birth to this episode, as this was kind of a topic that had been brewing a little bit in my mind for a while now. And Floyd then ended up reaching out to me back in December and then kind of helped bring this topic into life. So to start it off, why don't you just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and kind of your career goals moving forward then as graduation's quickly approaching?
Thanks, Kyle. So yeah, my name's Floyd Williams, like Kyle said. I was born in Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, raised in Texas. I went to high school in San Antonio, Texas, and graduated from Judson Senior High School, which kind of wants you to leave high school with some type of certification or some type of training that can kind of put you directly into the career force. I originally started on the criminal justice track in high school, so I wanted to graduate with my junior paralegal certifications and some way find my career within the legal path. But it was during my meeting with my advisor where she suggested that I take a vet med course because I did have a focus in kind of like animal cruelty cases and animal law. So she told me that I should take the vet med course at my high school. And then after that, I kind of like fell in love with vet med for sure. And I was like, this is what I want to do. So I graduated high school with my vet assistant certification. And in order to get that vet assistant certification, you have to work 500 hours with a veterinarian and like complete certain skills and stuff like that based on the Texas Board of Veterinary Medicine's. Like, it was a pretty rigorous program, but it like really opened my eyes to the intimate and the more direct approach of advocacy for those animals, and basically where I found myself in vet med. But after being a vet assistant, of course, I knew that I wanted some more. So I knew that vet school was the route that I wanted to go. I got into Prairie View A&M University, which is a historically Black college or university in Texas. It's the second oldest state institution in the state of Texas and the first state school to accept African Americans. So it's a pretty like pretty big part of my education for sure, because it's kind of where I found my voice. And it's just something about studying it's actually on the actual plantation where slaves were kept. And it was originally called Alta Vista College for the slaves or the colored youth. And that was the original university name. It's just something about like going through the university history and getting my degree there. And of course, seeing a lot of people that want to accomplish great things and strive for the best that look like me. And it just kind of like the environment was very surreal kind of growing up in Texas to see so many like thriving people that looked and sounded like me and had kind of the same cultural background. It was a pretty big point in my life and just kind of really shaped my interest in making sure to be the change I want to see, not only in this world, but more specifically this profession. So Prairie View A&M, I got my degree in animal science, did a lot of work with the Houston SPCA. I worked with Dr. Diara Blue at Cypher Animal Hospital, and then also Drs. Aubrey Ross and Dr. Michael Levine. Those are all my mentors. They ultimately kind of like helped me get into vet school. With not only the letter of recommendations, but also just kind of training me and preparing me for what it's like to be an African-American male in this profession. And I feel like that was a pretty guiding light, because my first dose of vet med was just seeing how white this profession was, kind of going through high school and getting my CVA. It's like there was never anybody that looked like me. And even clients would make that very apparent every time I would talk to them or do like the client interviews and stuff like that. So it was a breath of fresh air for sure to work in an environment where there's not only one black veterinarian, there's three black veterinarians, and they're thriving, and they've got a very beautiful hospital, and they're just doing great things. So just it was a good like uplift for sure, and just something that I could see myself doing for sure in this profession. So not only do they help me with like the letter of recommendations, but of course with just like the motivation to keep succeeding in this profession. But I got into Purdue University through an early acceptance program, and it's a program that they specifically recruit from like historically black colleges, universities, or other underrepresented communities or colleges, of course. And at that specific year when I did my program at Purdue. We had a lot of Michigan State students, actually. So Michigan State program unfortunately wasn't able to operate that summer. So all of the students were transferred into my program. So of course it got a little more competitive. But it was so great meeting a lot of Michigan State students, and just the camaraderie of the program itself just helped with the networking and allowed me to meet so many new people that also wanted to go into this profession like me. So I got into Purdue through that early acceptance program, matriculated into vet school, done a few other things since then, but yeah, that's where I'm now. I'm currently a fourth year vet student. My plan is to pursue after I do complete my internship and small animal rotating. I'm going to pursue emergency critical care and then focus my clinical research on exotic and wildlife animal stabilization and triage skills.
Yeah, no, that's awesome and
Yeah.
really, really cool background story too. I think that's something that speaks to, again, how the voice that you want to bring to vet med, and it's certainly an experience that I don't think a lot of people get to have,
Right.
and definitely has, I'm sure, shaped exactly who you are now and is such an important aspect to then bring to veterinary medicine and to kind of incorporate not only into your schooling, but then your career moving forward. So
Right.
it's so important to have those different backgrounds. And at least I view it as something that's lucky that you were able to experience. And I hope other people kind of
Yeah.
view that as well. So I'm glad people get to hear that and now get to experience from that, just at least in your voice here. So.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, it's definitely a journey, and it's a blessing every day, just realizing how far I've come for sure, and all the different routes I had and reroutes, unfortunately, that I've had to take to get here. But at the end of the day, I'm where I didn't expect myself to be from like high school, essentially. And I think that that's just like a big sigh of relief, as well as just kind of like another reason to keep going and just defying those odds that were kind of stacked against you.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. Well, let's first then maybe break down diversity, equity, and inclusion, which from now on in our episode, we'll kind of usually refer it to as DEI. So what do those words necessarily mean, and what exactly is represented when people think about or refer to DEI?
Yeah, I think that lately we've been doing a good job as making sure that we're keeping the rhetoric around DEI kind of clear and concise. Because I'd say that when I first was introduced to the term DEI or diversity, equity, and inclusion, I truly didn't understand what people meant by it because there were so many different definitions. Good thing is at Purdue, we have a great diversity, equity, inclusion office, and they do a lot of good research within the veterinary profession. And then they also have kind of like a module program that you can become certified in diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it just kind of gave me a whole new outlook on the entire scope of what we mean when we say DEI. I think for me, I'm just kind of like with my own implicit biases, diversity, equity, inclusion only meant like, based on race, or maybe your sexuality or something like that. But kind of going through the modules, there's so much more to it. It's beyond like gender. There's age biases, there's race, there's just so many aspects and so many different variables within DEI that you have to really kind of sit down and want to do the research and want to learn about it. But just kind of like superficially, diversity is kind of what you see. It's when you walk into a room, and are you able to see people that either look and dress the exact same? Or are you able to see people from different backgrounds? Are you able to listen to different tones of voice, different dialect, different accents? Like, are you seeing people from different places? Are they wearing different garments that represent their culture? Diversity is something you see, whereas inclusion is something that you feel. Inclusion is like, okay, I'm walking into this room, I'm seeing more faces that look like me, but do these faces feel safe? Are they able to express themselves in their natural tone? Are they able to speak the way that they speak at home? Are they comfortable just kind of being here and being them? Or are they having to suppress who they are to fit into a certain stereotype or a certain, I guess, persona that's expected to be in that room? So I think that a lot of times, like schools and organizations want to rush brush and fix the diversity part, but they don't realize that the inclusion is what's very necessary to not only kind of recruit people into these spaces, but to keep them. A lot of times that people get into these spaces, realize that that's not the space for them, and they'll just kind of leave that space and make their own bubble. And that doesn't really help the problem at hand. Because that space is still, you know, just as clear and concise as it was expected to be before. Whereas making sure that people are included in the talks, making sure that people are included in the discussion, and ultimately just making sure that people feel welcome in those rooms is what I think inclusion means. As far as equity, it's kind of an economic term historically. It's kind of like just we need to be able to recognize that this is not necessarily an equitable profession, let alone like college is kind of like not as accessible to a lot of different communities, a lot of different cultures, a lot of different backgrounds, because with the way, especially in our country, the way that people were set up from post Jim Crow era, like the ability to go to schooling past high school was a luxury. It's something that you're not able to do because a lot of times you have to go back and take care of the family. You have to get a job in high school. You have to help pay the bills. It's like not something that's sought after because you have so many other responsibilities as a teenager that not all teenagers are kind of accustomed to. So I think that equity is just making sure that we're allowing that. We're making changes that are necessary to create access to these type of careers or these career paths in the form of creating scholarships, in the form of creating early acceptance programs, in the form of like Michigan State. They're like the first big schools to prevent like the GRE or the MCAT or the whatever the test is for dental school, because they realized that a lot of these standardized tests are not testing students on the same level or the same standard of education, because their standards are of course of Eurocentric beliefs and standards. So it's not able to kind of translate to everyone across the entire United States. And of course, those underserved communities are not getting the same quality of education as a lot of those applicants. So that alone was a big barrier from preventing a lot of the DEI that we needed in these professions. So I think that along with Michigan State, Purdue followed suit and they dropped the GRE. They're just kind of making pursuit for this profession more equitable for all.
Yeah, and I agree that I think sometimes when you're thinking about those terms, diversity, equity, inclusion, there is a lot of differences or a lot of emphasis that was put on just the specific definitions. But I think how you explained it was absolutely amazing, and how it shouldn't necessarily be focusing on the little words that make up that definition, but it should be, again, like right. What you see, how you feel, that type of thing that is more important to how we then view DEI. And even Michigan State, I don't know if other schools do it either, but Michigan State, we had a class where we actually did produce modules in DEI. And so then we were able to get certified in that as well. And I'm not sure if other schools do that, but certainly if they're not, I think they should. And even though it was mandatory for us, even though it's considered mandatory, I still think overall, that's an important component to bring into veterinary medicine. And if you have to, it shouldn't have to be mandatory. Obviously, people should be willing to want to do
right.
But I still think it should be incorporated in some way. And if that's the facet that it's incorporated, then I think it's important to do that across the board.
Yeah, I agree. Like sometimes it's just one of those hard pills to swallow. A lot of people don't like to be made uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, you have to think about the people that are uncomfortable every day in those rooms that you're walking into, thinking about things that you wouldn't have to think about as a white male in those rooms sometimes. So I think that it's just, unfortunately, you have to slap on that term mandatory, but just like incorporating it within the curriculum, because it's important for this not only our profession, but for this world. Part of our oath is making sure that we ensure the safety of public health as well, and our ability to reach certain clients of different backgrounds, different cultures, different religion, different gender expectations, just different gender norms. I think that it's important for us to be able to welcome those people into our hospitals or whatever type of setting that we're practicing this medicine in, so that we're allowing to touch more and treat more animals and reach, and not only like reach and discover more diseases, but eradicate and cure. Because when I was growing up, veterinarians, that's not even part of the role. We would have an animal, of course, if it gets sick. I think that the animal would just kind of disappear. My dad would take it across town and let the dog go. It wasn't like we'd put money into the dog. It wasn't a thing. But also, you never see Black veterinarians. So how much of an impact would a Black veterinarian make going into these communities and showing his or her face and showing them that veterinarian is accessible? It's affordable. It's something that we need to do. And sometimes it's simple, more simple than we expect. So It's just like the exposure is a big part that we need to focus on as well, and make sure that we're able to fill in these spaces with different colored faces and different people and diversity, and be more inclusive about our environments so that we can make a bigger impact on this world.
Yeah, and I think kind of as you were touching on, it's something that can be done, I guess, or should be focused on more in schools, and the fact that they can start to incorporate this. So then when we actually go out into the real world and are practicing veterinary medicine, then that's also expressed to the communities
Exactly.
that we're involved in. So
Yeah, it's important. Like the allyship is like most important. We, the people that are of the marginalized population, we know and feel, and we recognize every day we wake up. That's not something that we even have to think about. It's just like an innate thought that we're constantly dealing with. But I think just making sure that we have allies in those room, and knowing that we have allies, and those allies being outward about their allyship, is just really how we can hit the home run and inclusion, and making sure that those environments are comfortable for everyone.
yeah, and I've obviously, being a white male myself, is that's kind of been the role that I've been placed in a lot of different situations where I can be an ally to people. And as you expressed it, it's something that we can definitely incorporate into our lives and into our practice that honestly can be fairly simple. And it's something that, again, I've seen a big impact by just being an ally for people that have has made a big difference and can continue to make a big difference.
Yeah, I feel like I've experienced some allyship recently, like even in as a fourth year, and I feel like that's been the most like profound part of going from an HBCU to PWI, Primarily White Institute. Just finally seeing those real world applications of allyship, and people stepping up and letting people know that what they, those microaggressive terms were not okay to say. And it's just such a heartwarming, good feeling to know that you don't always have to stick up for yourself in those situations, because it gets exhausting. Like, on top of being a veterinary student, on top of juggling all these patients, on top of preparing for boards, like I also have to like defend myself in those spaces too. So I think the allyship just is a huge hitter on the inclusion part of diversity and inclusion.
Right. Yeah. So I know we've kind of touched a little bit on now, but overall, then what would you kind of say is the current state of DEI in veterinary medicine?
Yeah, I think I thought about this for quite some time, because it's like, you know, that history is kind of like repeating itself in a sense, and it just kind of feels like we're going nowhere on a world or a global sense with a lot of the issues that we're facing. But as far as vet med, I can honestly say that I feel like we're in a big transition, as far as like from the older school methods or thoughts or just like beliefs in vet med. And then kind of like knowing that, and just becoming aware that, you know, certain people do hold power within certain situations, or people do need to be more aware of their microaggressive terms and stuff like that. And then also, just more importantly, is just your unconscious biases that you all kind of have. I've had more conversations with my colleagues. I've witnessed more like just more situations where I felt like there were people just kind of applying those things that we're talking about as far as DEI today. And I don't know if it's specifically just because I'm at Purdue, where we are, it is in our curriculum to do those modules and of course discuss them. But I've had more colleagues, not just simply students, but also clinicians and faculty, walk up to me after they've seen or dealt with a situation that did include maybe a Black person or someone else of minority status. And they wanted to figure out how they should have either approached it, or to make sure that the way that they did approach it was well. And I felt like that alone, just people wanting to approach you and talk to you about things like that, has been a huge step. Or it's just something that's almost palpable. It's not something that's just in theory and what you should be in, or something that you're seeing on those like pretty like basic module videos and like how you should respond in the situation. It's like, wow, this is real life, and people are doing it, and people are actually applying it. So I feel like we're like kind of in a transition phase of just becoming aware, but also just starting to implement some of those strategies to make sure that these spaces are comfortable for all.
Yeah, and I think I would agree with you too from what I've seen. And obviously, I come from a different vet school, but I agree. I think we kind of are in this transition, and maybe it's kind of our generation, I guess, of vets. And I say generation of vets, not necessarily generation, like age group generation, because there's a lot, like a large age range within that, but just kind of us as new vets coming out or new grads. I do think it has kind of we're putting that more into the forefront or more into the importance of vet men, that we're starting to see that. And I think another point that you brought up too is how you had clinicians or other colleagues that would come up to you or someone else that would then ask, was there something I should have done better, or was that correct on how I did that? And that's the thing too, is you don't have to hold yourself to this perfect mindset. Like, you're probably going to make mistakes. It's just a part of how things are. And if you do make a mistake, then it's how you respond to that. So just like that, if you felt like you were in that situation and you didn't handle it the best, well, then figure out how you can handle it better to then make it better for the next time that you're in that situation. So I think it doesn't have to, you don't have to be perfect every single time, but just handle yourself in a way then afterwards where you make a difference.
Yeah, exactly. And then I guess for the other end of that, for the students that do look like me or that do kind of represent just anyone, the community of a minority basis, I think that it's important for us to realize that, yes, it's kind of exhausting to have to be the one that people go to in these situations. And yes, it can be aggravating. And by all means, create those boundaries and let people know that, hey, I can't discuss this right now because I just can't deal with it. Or maybe let's discuss it tomorrow. For sure, be willing to set those boundaries, or just let people know that you don't represent the entire group and you don't feel comfortable discussing it. But I think it's just important for us to realize is that our ancestors have gone through so many more physical, verbal, just so many other bouts of abuse. And I think that we need to realize that this is a struggle we're going to have to deal with. But until we face it and become a part of the change and be willing to put in the work that the minimal work that it takes to just help educate the people, because at the end of the day, it's ignorance. Not everyone is raised in this environment. Not everybody knows how I feel when I wake up. Nobody knows how I feel when I walk into a room with no one that looks like me. But until someone comes up to me and asks me, and I actually am willing to explain it to them, I don't think that it will ever be discovered. So I think that we have to be willing to put in the work to just have those conversations and know that it's uncomfortable from both ends and realize that we're all human. And I think that the main thing is just to be understanding of each other on both sides.
Yeah. And I think too, if it is a clinician or colleague or whatever, you find in yourself in that position where you felt like you maybe handled that situation poorly, similar to how we handle cases in veterinary medicine, then you find a resource that's reliable as well that you can do on your own.
Right.
So then it's something that, again, it's you carrying that then task to be able to figure out, what do I need to do better? And then it can be very similar to how you would just handle a case where you know something about it, and we can still tackle it that way. So then you still are not putting, again, that burden on someone like perhaps yourself, if it was something in that situation. And you can come out and be better. And it certainly can be something that you address yourself. And maybe then if you can't figure it out yourself, or you feel like you're still having questions, then maybe that's when you reach out to a person you trust or a person who's willing to help you with that.
Yeah, and I feel like that goes a long way for sure. Like, I feel like if someone comes to me with a little bit of the work that they've done to figure out the situation, and then we kind of discuss it, it's such a better conversation. And it's just kind of like a different environment, because it's not like you kind of just sought out, have me represent the entire population of whatever that situation may be. But you put in the grunt work and you've let me know, this is what you found, this is what you think. And you know that you kind of have some worries that it may not have gone the right way. You just kind of want to correct it for the future. I think that entire notion is just something that can go a long way in this profession. But just like being simple human beings in this world, we have to be willing to interact with each other in a way that respects your culture, respects your identity. And just knowing that we're always going to be interacting with people from different places. So we have to just know that in our hearts every time we interact with everyone.
Yeah. Well, let's shift gear a little bit and let's then talk about kind of the subsegment of vet med that we are really interested in. So that kind of being that passion for exotic or wildlife zoo and aquatic medicine. So I guess, how do you think that the situation of DEI in veterinary medicine overall compares to then that specific subsegment within kind of exotic and wildlife zoo medicine?
Yeah, it's kind of like that was kind of a question I've been kind of pondering on too. It's kind of difficult to think about. You just kind of, once again, just go back to the equity of it all. Just veterinarians, it's hard enough to get into veterinary medicine. It's hard enough to get the motivation to get into veterinary medicine, but also if you don't really see yourself in vet med, you don't want to do it because it doesn't seem like that profession is for you. So once we finally get over the hump of making sure that diversity in veterinary medicine as a whole is accessible and equitable for all, I think that that's when we can make sure that these subsectors, including exotics and wildlife, are able to be fortified with more diverse faces and make sure that we're able to serve more people that have pets that are of exotic species. But I think that at the end of the day, it's just kind of wanting to being able to pursue an internship, being able to pursue a residency. It's once again one of those luxuries that not everyone has. Going into college is sometimes you're going to be gathering a bunch of debt, and you need to get out and make sure that you're able to put food on the table, take care of your parents, get them out of the hood, or whatever you need to do. Let alone going into vet school for another, 4 years of not being able to work and make money and send money back and take care of the family that you're likely taking care of, to do all of that for another 8 years, and then want to do a rotating internship where you're taking a huge pay cut, and then taking a huge pay cut for another 3 to 4 years for residency. It's just not really equitable for everyone, because like it goes back to post Jim Crow era. There were just not everybody had the same starting point. Not everyone had the appropriate types of home loans. Not everybody was able to assume generational wealth when it was a good time for everyone to assume generational wealth. So you have people that are living off of government assistance that are able to finally get their kid into good college, able to get them into a good vet school. But now you're telling me that I need to let my kid continue to go and not make enough money to help me, like, get my bills paid, make sure to get my parent out of the rental home or anything like that. So I think that you personally, as an individual who's experiencing just kind of what it is to be a minority in this country, and like historically, it's not as equitable as it is for someone who has had proper generational wealth. Their parents have both been to college. Both parents are still together. They're living in a home where they have constant assistance. They're not really having to worry about sending money to home to their family. The fear of gathering more debt than they could ever, cover is not there. So I think that at the end of the day, it's all about equity, and we need to find a way to make sure that these routes into these different specialties within vet med are accessible to everyone. And if you're going to open up these, because while I was looking for internship and residencies, they do have positions that are of DEI, like specific. So you have to come from a background of an underserved community, but you're also expected to kind of be kind of like that agent or that liaison for DEI and do extra projects and stuff, but the payment isn't there to make sure that you're able to be that agent, to be that liaison, and also do the research that the profession needs, but they're having you do it for the same amount of pay. And it's like, that's not really going to be equitable, because once again, that student may have to send home to his or her parents to help pay the bills, to help their younger siblings get through school, just to help put food on the table too. They can barely afford rent on their own. So I think that at the end of the day, it comes down to equity, and how we're able to make these different specialties more accessible to all. And I think that once we do find a way to recruit more diverse people into this profession, a lot of the problems we're dealing with in vet med alone, but exotic vet med can be eradicated, because it's once again, we have to bring in fresh thoughts, fresh minds, different perspectives. And that's been shown time and time again, statistically, that having diverse staff and having diverse teams really increases the ability to have appropriate outcomes or positive outcomes in any aspects of our profession. So I think that we just need to focus on making sure that accessibility and just the ability for students to matriculate into these positions is there.
Yeah, and I think too, just like you were saying with equity, I mean, any specialty that you want to go into, just in veterinary medicine in general, a small animal rotating in the residency, yeah, you're certainly not getting paid nearly as much as what you can by just going out and going straight into small animal practice. I mean, it's probably a third or even a quarter of what you could make out in general practice.
Honestly,
So,
especially nowadays, like you can
right.
go into ER making six-figure salary, whereas going into an internship academic, you're sometimes making less than 35, sometimes less than
Yeah.
$30,000 an hour. So it's like it's pretty scary. And they expect you to be able to live and thrive and be a normal human being during that process. So it's just those routes are just not something that is, of course, somebody may really want to be a zoo veterinarian, but They know that once again they have to go home and help take care of their parents, help take care of their siblings. They once again have different responsibilities because unfortunately we were not all cut from the same cloth and didn't have access to the same benefits in the early stages of this country. So it's just not really equitable for people to pursue that path.
Yeah. And then in zoo med or kind of exotic or whatever path in general specifically,
right.
Now, most people, when they go, if they're looking for board certification, you do a small amount of rotating. So that's one internship. And then you do an additional internship in exotic,
exactly.
Whatever that may be. And then you would do an additional 3-year residency.
Exactly.
So it's even more time that you're making not a lot of money and not
no.
having a lot of financial support. So making it even farther of, or I guess more of a goal that seems unattainable for some individuals.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think
exactly.
too, then in, with diversity in general too, like what you're saying with what you see, I know at least specifically when I was on a lot of my externships within wildlife zoo and exotic medicine, there isn't a lot of diversity that you see. And again, not to any specific person's fault or anything like that, but just the reality of it, there isn't a lot of diversity within that specific field of vet med.
Oh, for sure. Like I've worked in a few exotic practices in Florida, a couple in Texas, of course. And then recently I went to Budapest Zoo and like, it was like time and time again where the keepers are like, whoa, like I haven't seen a black man in this profession at all. And like, you want to go like, so they're very like kind of just celebratory at the fact that they've met not only an American student, but an African-American student that wants to pursue a zoo med. So it was like, I get it. Like I'm a unicorn, but then that just really like kind of put it into perspective. Like not only is it a United States issue, it's a worldwide global issue. This is something that people are noticing worldwide, at least in Hungary, that they don't see many faces that look like me in this profession. I think that was like another big like motivation to once again, just be the change that I want to see, show people that this is something that we can do and then let them know that there aren't as many barriers as it seems. We just have to like deal with it and get through it.
Yeah. And putting a lot of like kind of responsibility and weight on your shoulders. But like you said, someone's kind of got to do it. And you certainly seem like the person that will take us towards that change that we need. So it's good.
I hope so. Thank you. I sure hope so.
Yeah.
I'm going to try. I'm going to try.
Well, I'm here to support you through it. So
appreciate that.
So I guess for DEI, I wanted to talk a little bit too about just your specific journey in vet med, and then also kind of on a different aspect too, how it's also impacted your personal life and your relationships as well.
Yeah, I'd say that it's been a blessing and a curse, of course, being able to like highlight my experiences as being an African-American pursuing this profession has been, I wouldn't say an easy story to tell, but it's become a story that people want to listen to. So applying for different programs and applying for different scholarships and things like that, I feel like it's helped me stick out, of course. And I think that it's caused me to have to really, really contemplate how I deliver myself in certain situations or different rooms, because once again, I realize that in any room or any situation, I'm not just representing me. I'm unfortunately representing a lot of people that look like me. So I have to make sure that I'm minding my P's and Q's and kind of representing, but also I need to make sure that these spaces aren't trying to produce a cutter prototype and that they accept me for me. So I feel like just making sure that I have my voice and I speak the way I speak always, and I talk about, and I have those difficult conversations and I talk about the different social injustices in whatever climate or whatever room that I'm in, I feel like that has been a pretty like tough part of like matriculating into this environment. So like I said, I went to an HBCU where everyone looked like me. So if something happened socially, whereas it's police brutality or some type of crazy law that Texas is trying to pass, we're like all collectively angry. And it's like you can feel the support, you can feel the collective rage in a sense towards that yet another tier of oppression being put upon people that look like me. Whereas like going into a PWI, it just felt like the environment wasn't the same. It felt like I was kind of like in my own little world dealing with things like on my own. So I didn't feel as though I had the collective support or anger, I guess, towards those type of issues. So I feel like that has been kind of heavy. But once again, I just kind of went through some pretty deep introspection, some meditation, of course, just kind of figuring out who I am and what I want to do with my life and the type of impact I want to make on this profession. I've realized that it's my duty to be the change that I want to see in this profession, not simply for myself, but I have a nephew, or and I'm going to have another nephew actually, and I know that they I'm going to try for sure to coerce them to go into vet med, but I don't want them I don't want them to have to experience the same situations that I've experienced or anything like that. So I think that it's been a pretty tough task, a rough road as far as the adjustment. But now, just making sure that I'm here, not only for me but for the people behind me, and just kind of like to keep pushing forward. I've been a lot more relaxed as far as my approach to different situations that I've dealt with in this profession. Namely, some of the ones are just like clients either questioning my job or what I'm supposed to be doing as a student, or just kind of like blatantly kind of discounting my thoughts. And it's just like I can't believe like we're in 2020 and we're still dealing with crap like this. Or to the point that there's been clients that have asked for a different student, and there's no other reason for them to ask for a different student. So it's been I've dealt with some crazy things in this profession, but more importantly, just like my path to becoming a veterinarian. But each situation, like, it just gives me a whole new perspective, and I just know not to internalize it and know that it's not a me thing, it's a them thing. And just kind of grow from it, and then just find ways to combat it and just keep moving, you know.
Yeah, and even kind of the way you described it in the beginning too, where you said it's a little bit of a blessing and a curse, and how in the fact that with those clients or with those people that you're working with that have kind of interacted with you in such an inappropriate way, again, is that curse aspect, but the person that it's then shaped you to become, and then the voice that it's given you has been that blessing. And certainly, I don't want anyone to feel like they don't belong in a certain situation or like they're being belittled or not necessarily valued because of something within DEI. Because that's certainly, like you said, in this time, there's no absolute like reason or acceptance for
Right.
that. And so it is, I don't want people to deal with that, but I'm happy to see that you're turning that into a positive to then impact people of the next generation, just like you talked about with your nephews.
Yeah, that's like pretty much my biggest like motivator to keep going, is that I know that there's going to be somebody that walks into this room that looks like me potentially. And I don't want them to have to deal with the same thing. So in that moment when I'm like, should I address this situation? Like, I think about that, I'm like, yeah, I need to address it. Like, it needs to be fixed. Because there's been plenty of times where I could easily just walk away, brush it off my shoulder, and just go on about my day and pretend it never happened. And that's, of course, the easier way to go. But like I said, I found my voice at my HBCU, and it helped me just be ready to advocate and just be able to be there to be anti-oppressive about all aspects of my life. I don't like a bully, and that's not one thing that I'll ever accept or let, you know, go by.
Yeah. And then, at least from my standpoint, kind of coming from a different arm of DEI in my past, kind of being afraid to be who I was or kind of letting others see who I was had shaped kind of how I led my life and certainly hurt some of my relationships in the past, both kind of in vet med and in my personal life. When I was in my first year of veterinary school, I met my girlfriend at that time during that time. And then even though like I had loved her and cared a lot about her, I still felt like there was kind of a part of me that was a stranger in that relationship just because I couldn't be honest with her about my own sexuality and because I wasn't even able to be honest about it with myself, truthfully. And that kind of ultimately broke me enough to where it was a big part of why I ended up ending that relationship. And another
Yeah,
thing was
sorry to hear
too,
that.
like she didn't know that that was a part of it because I wasn't able to be honest about being bisexual, and just because I couldn't tell her because I couldn't even tell it again to myself or to people I truly cared about. So in that angle, I obviously felt that and how it's kind of spilled into veterinary medicine, obviously too. Before I was open about being bisexual, which was a little less than a year ago now that I've been kind of comfortable with that. There was definitely certain externships or times where I was in the clinic floor where I would lie about my sexuality. And that was because I was afraid it would maybe change the way they worked with me or saw me, or maybe I would even receive a worse grade because of it. And again,
Yeah,
shouldn't be how it is. And
that should not be how it is.
right.
That
And I
is.
mean, I guess kind of the blessing aspect that that's the angle of DEI that I have incorporated to my life is I can hide it. And again, it shouldn't be something I have to hide, But it is something where if it's a race or a religion, that's, you might not necessarily be able to hide that. It's always there. And again, it shouldn't, any of this should not be something you have to hide, but it's just kind of interesting to see how there's a lot of different angles to how DEI can be incorporated and impact someone's life. And it just goes to show again, how large of a aspect that this is within any profession and how it needs to be better in our profession specifically.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a powerful story, man. Like I couldn't imagine like that's a lot to not only just accept for yourself, but to be willing to share on a platform like this. So I for sure commend you. That's amazing. But I agree. Like that, I think that just kind of fits in the term code switching. It's kind of like you literally just kind of become a different person so that you're able to hide that, that aspect of yourself. We had a speaker come to our school and he was letting us know how to get a job. And of course he went through the basics on how you should dress and how you should act. Then he went into kind of more specific as far as verbal dialect and sounding as if you have an education. And he just kept using more and more rhetoric that was pretty excluding to some. And then I finally just kind of like, I raised my hand and I was like, what do you mean by talking a certain way? Like what way are people supposed to speak? He even made a quote that he had a client that came in and sounded like she had less than a high school education or something. He was like, and he also kind of assimilated that to her funds and her ability to pay for her pet. And I was like, you're kind of just being very blatant with your unconscious biases here. And I asked the question, like, kind of, what do you mean by that? And he kind of blew it off, of course. So afterwards, I followed up with him, went down to the front of the class, and I was just like, hey, have you ever heard of code switching? And he's just kind of like, yeah. And then he made some weird statement about, if you're in France, you know, you have to be able to act a different way when you're in France because you're in a different country. And I was like, that's like, has nothing to do with, you know, I was like, respecting someone's, you know, ways of their land is completely different from expecting someone to walk and talk a certain way when they walk into your practice. Mm-hmm. I was like, by you continuing to perpetuate the need for code switching, just so that you can be of proper status, of hireable status, of appropriate, I guess now it's your grades, your IQ is based on how you speak. Like you're excluding a lot of people,
yeah,
or you're creating that anxiety that they shouldn't speak the way that they were raised to speak. I was like, you're from Indiana. I was like, I'm from Texas, where people can have very, very deep Southern accents, but that has nothing to do with how smart they are.
Yep.
I was like, so you literally cannot use that as an appeal to hiring graduates. And that conversation, this was my third year before we went into fourth year. Mm-hmm. I was like, that conversation alone, and he's the one that's very successful, has a very, very successful business, and he's the one out there hiring people and telling his doctors how to hire people. So it's like, yeah, just knowing that that's a huge roadblock right there is pretty like intense. And it just sucks that people feel like they can't be themselves and they have to completely code switch just to get a job or just to get their patient seen and treated equally and not counting their pockets based on how they sound or look or whatever. It's terrible. I don't like that. It shouldn't be like that by now.
Right.
It should not be like that.
Yeah.
So that's why it's important to make these, we need to let people know that we're allies. We need to make all of these environments more inclusive, be more loud about being anti-oppressive and anti-racist and just, you know, really being willing to speak out.
Right. And I think that goes again for the generation of vets that we are a part of, where we're demanding that that's not how you go about and hire things. And if that is how you're hiring it, then we don't want to be a part of it.
Exactly.
Eventually, it will start to be weeded out because we know that that is not acceptable. And hopefully then with us coming forward and other people joining, whether you're from like a new grad or not, then hopefully that will start to be phased out, because like you said, there, that should not be at all how that is.
No, that's a whole nother level of anxiety that no one needs to deal with.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So kind of the big question then is, what can necessarily be done to change the current state of DEI that we've kind of talked about now in this episode? And why is it important, again, that we make this a prominent entity in VetMed?
Yeah. As far as like specific like programs or anything that we should do, I don't know. I think that we're all just kind of like figuring out because of the dynamics of this profession and just like social society as a whole. And luckily with like like you said, our generation being a little bit more aware of the differences between people, I think that it'll be easier to just to kind of just say that we need to have more of these conversations. We need to have this rhetoric out there. Let people know that it's okay to approach people and ask about these questions. Just know that the more we talk about it, the more we discuss it and recognize it as an issue that we have, and not just, you know, something that some person in that business can take over, like as far as like a chair or a dean or something of that diversity inclusion will fix. No, it has to be each and every one of us in this profession have to put in the work to make this, put this profession more inclusive, make this profession more diverse, make it more equitable for everyone. Because at the end of the day, that one doctor that spoke with us, he's probably throwing away so many applications just because of his own unconscious biases, but he doesn't know that it's an unconscious bias that he has because he's just unaware. It hasn't been told to him that, you know, you need to fix your hiring standards. Hopefully that conversation we had was able to get him to at least think about it. But I think that the more we talk about it, the more that we're able to have these uncomfortable conversations, the more that we're willing to see change. And I think the more we keep it just kind of like hush hush and like kind of in the back of the classroom, then we're not really ever going to address it. And we're not ever really going to see the change that we need.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is something that we need to start putting more into the forefront of what we're doing. And like you said, I don't know what's the best way to incorporate it into it either. Certainly kind of what Michigan State did by having us have the opportunity to do the modules, the DEI modules through Purdue, is certainly a step in the right direction. And good to see that that's happening. And hopefully that continues to be incorporated in. So we'll see. It's definitely an exciting time. And I, like you said, making conversation and having that be put out there into the world, which was a big part of why we both wanted to have this episode come to life. Because at least no matter how many people listen to it or how far it reaches, it's out there. And it's out there for people to share the message and hopefully feel something better about it because of those words. So.
Exactly. Like that's just the biggest part is exposure and being able to reach more people. So I think that definitely just having more discussions like these, not only just between like us and this, but like with your families, with like at the dinner table, making everybody aware that this stuff is happening. This is how we need to fix it. And this is what needs to be changed, essentially.
Yeah. And I challenge people listening to do that exactly while bring it to your colleagues that you have in VetMed, but also bring it to your families, to your friends, and start to incorporate that in kind of your daily life. Because as soon as, again, it's incorporated more into that and accepted in daily life, it's going to be that much easier to incorporate it into other professions, including veterinary medicine. So,
exactly.
All right. Well, any final thoughts or kind of important points that you would like to highlight for our listeners before you go?
No, not really. I think that this discussion is pretty fulfilling, honestly. I feel like I was able to speak with you about a lot of things that I've been just kind of processing as far as my thoughts, and it just felt good to speak with someone and get your take on it as well. I think the most important takeaway is just be willing to have those uncomfortable conversations. Mm-hmm. It may be uncomfortable to bring it up or to approach that person about that conversation, but imagine how uncomfortable it is being that person of the topic that you want to discuss. You know, that's just something they have to always live with no matter what. So be willing to have that 5 to 10 minutes of discomfort. Hopefully that's not the entire conversation, but just be willing to have that minimally uncomfortable conversation to hopefully make a bigger change and just make the environment and the world more comfortable for all.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I'm glad I can provide this, obviously, platform for you to share your voice that you've then been able to have and grow over your time, both before veterinary medicine and now within veterinary medicine. So I'm glad that we have that out there. And I hope people, again, are really impacted by that and want to make a change for it for the better for everyone within our profession. So thank you again for joining me on here and speaking your truth.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kyle. I appreciate it.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed my conversation with Floyd and really felt like you connected or got something out of the discussion. I know I did, and I absolutely loved having that time and being able to share those words with the world. Now buckle up and grab your popcorn, because next up is Hera Bossett. Hey Hera, and welcome to this episode of We'll Walk on the Wild Side. So I am thrilled to have you on to chat about how DEI has impacted your journey in veterinary medicine and how it led to your organization, the Association of Asian Veterinary Medical Professionals, or AAVMP. So for all of our listeners, do you want to just start by telling them a little bit about yourself and then your aspirations in vet med following graduation this year?
Yeah, definitely. So my name is Hitta Bossett, and I am a fourth year at the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine. I have grown up in Miami my whole life, kind of always been from South Florida. I was raised Pakistani American and Muslim. So I have kind of an interesting mixture there because Miami is full of like a Latin spice attitude kind of thing. So a lot of different cultures kind of influenced me growing up. I co-founded the AAVMP alongside Dr. Stephanie Kuo in April of 2020, and we joined forces with our founding board members to kind of create the AAVMP has become today. And we have a whole team of board of directors and executive board members working to make this organization exactly what it is. Aside from my work with the AAVMP, I'm really, really interested in emergency and critical care medicine. So I'm actually, after graduation, going to start Veterinary Emergency Group's Early Entry Track Program. So I will be moving to New York City, which should be interesting, but I'm very, very excited for that.
Yes, and congratulations again. I know, obviously, before this, I said that, but that is amazing and really, really incredible that you get to follow your passion to do that. So
thank you.
Yeah. All right. So of course, I would love for you to talk more about your inspiration behind founding the Association of Asian Veterinary Medical Professionals Oregon, AAVMP, and how this organization then has incorporated DEI into its mission.
Yeah. So I think what really encouraged me to start this organization was it started with the pandemic, of course, March 2020, kind of feelings of isolation and wanting to feel like I had a community that understood what was happening because there were so many feelings going around during this time. And then on top of that, with all of the anti-Asian incidents that started occurring when the pandemic began and how they nearly doubled within that year. So I kind of had that increased awareness and interest in making sure that people understood that Asians are not a monolith, that Asia is a wonderfully diverse country, and that there are Asians in vet med. I mean, it's a stigmatized thing for Asians to do anything other than become human doctors or engineers or lawyers. So I wanted to show people that it's possible, and representation is one of our core values. So we definitely wanted to make sure that Asians in vet med had a space. And we also wanted to make sure that it was not specific to veterinarians, because so much of our support staff, so our technicians, our assistants, our client service coordinators, our practice managers, they are all so important and vital to this. And it's grown incredibly, and that makes me really happy. And we have so many people who message us all the time, just letting us know how much of an impact we've made for them. So that makes me really, really happy. I think I answered the whole question, but you can let me know if I missed a portion of it.
Yeah, no, I think you did. And I think, again, just highlighting some of that too, it is incredible how, and I mean, very unfortunate and sad how it started from something with our pandemic and kind of this misunderstanding and blame that was put on Asians just in general, and very wrongfully so. But the birth that came out of this with your organization is incredible, and something so simple of that, just creating this space and this community for people to then be able to connect and share themselves as they grow through the profession. I can imagine how much it's impacted people. So again, just congratulations on what it's from starting that and what it's become. It's absolutely blown into this incredible thing. So very, very well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So one thing I wanted to ask was, so have you personally experienced, or maybe have you seen situations in veterinary medicine in which equality or inclusion has maybe fallen through the cracks? Have you maybe seen areas in vet med or maybe related aspects to the career field in which you still think that there is this inequality, discrimination, or bias there?
Definitely. I've personally experienced it even just before I started applying to veterinary school, working in a small animal practice. I dealt with kind of people during the time of the Muslim ban, a lot of, you know, verbal harassment and things like that, or like saying certain things without realizing that I was Muslim, because I guess I just blended in with everybody at my practice in Miami. But luckily, the veterinarian at that practice kind of defended me and kind of said, you know, this isn't right for you to say that, but that is not the norm for people to usually defend you. And I've seen and heard, last Asian American History Month, we kind of had a talk about microaggressions and how a couple of residents and interns would face pretty substantial microaggressions in their day-to-day lives and how it's just challenging. And one of our executive board members mentioned how she went to go talk to a client, and the client was like, oh, so you're Oriental, and kind of little things like that, that just don't really make us feel really good. I do think that luckily the field is becoming much more diverse now. So there's an awareness that you need to be a little bit more cognizant and kind of ask your colleagues what is appropriate and what isn't. So for example, with me, I have found the most help and mentorship in people who understand that my background and my culture definitely contribute to who I am and how I practice veterinary medicine. So knowing that and having those people to support you is really important, but there's also a lot of work to be done, which is why personally, I feel like DEI workshops should be something that people continuously have to go through when they work in a field like ours. And I don't see that changing anytime soon, but I would love to have that be implemented, especially in teaching hospitals where so many people of different backgrounds are there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think you made an important point too with how people from different backgrounds and different beliefs or whatever it may be, how that actually brings this diversity to veterinary medicine and other career fields as well. That actually makes us better as a career, at least I think in my opinion. And yeah. It's certainly something to celebrate. And I think the more that you bring this diversity in, I mean, change is a good thing. And if we continue to change, then we'll grow into something that's even better. So I hope obviously that, yeah, we do continue to celebrate DEI and bring those workshops and all those things in there too. I guess a follow-up question to that would be, you kind of said microaggressions are things that you've seen as you've gone through clinics. Do you mind first just explaining to our listeners what microaggression might necessarily mean and then how you would address it if it happens to you in that situation?
Yeah. So I don't know the exact Webster Dictionary thing of microaggressions, but basically microaggressions are usually from a place of either ignorance or just unawareness of certain things. So for example, the one that I can think of is talking to an African-American or Black colleague and saying, "Oh man, I love your hair. Can I touch it?" And things like that, that just put that person in a position where their ethnicity or their background or anything that has to do with their culture kind of gets put on a spotlight in a negative way, even if it isn't meant like that. So a microaggression that I faced when I was interviewing at veterinary schools was they were speaking to me and my sister, who joined me at an interview at a school that I will not say the name of. But basically one of the administrators or faculty, not sure who, was mentioning how they had wonderful Mexican restaurants around the area or Hispanic restaurants. And then I was like, "Oh, that's awesome." Cause they initially thought that we were Hispanic. And then I think we said something that made him think that we were not. And he goes, "Oh, and also Indian food. It's delicious. We've got delicious Indian food here." So it was kind of like, okay, I get you're trying to come from a good place, but this isn't making me feel like I'm going to go in a space where people understand me. So that's just an example of microaggression that I can think of. And every now and then, if you deal with it, you can kind of handle it, I think. And unfortunately, you have to build a thick skin when you are a minority in a profession. But when you deal with it day in and day out, it can really become draining. And a good example is I am part of the Multicultural Veterinary Medical Association's Facebook group. And on there, one of the members was talking about how she was just sick and tired of trying to teach the majority in the profession about DEI and how the majority should do the work themselves and then come with questions rather than just being like, okay, spew everything you know about DEI, because it's so taxing to have to constantly teach people and relive the trauma that we've experienced as minorities. So something that I think that we as minorities can do is create boundaries and let people know, listen, I'm not in the headspace to teach you about this. If you want to learn about it, here are some resources, learn on your own. And if you still have questions and I'm in the right space, come and ask me. Or a quick Google search can find the information that you need. Google's an amazing thing. You don't need to ask a minority just because you know that they are a minority, especially if you don't have a close relationship with them. So that's kind of my advice there for that.
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice too. And as you said too, it is taxing to deal with that every day on top of the things that we just have to deal with in general in veterinary medicine. It's not an easy profession. Adding any more to people in that is just, it's unnecessary. And so, but I think that's great advice for people who then do have to handle that. And like you said, by incorporating DEI more into kind of our education as veterinary students, hopefully then we'll start to minimize that because they'll have that background and then they can form these more educated questions to then be better informed if there still are some gaps there. So,
yeah, exactly.
So we maybe touched a little bit on it, but so what changes then or growth do you want to see in veterinary medicine when it comes to DEI? And how do you think that we can all kind of work together to see those changes and make sure DEI is a fundamental part of vet med?
I think that the biggest issues that I feel like AAVMP is going to tackle is creating that representation that we really need, and most importantly, mentorship for veterinary professionals of Asian backgrounds to go into leadership roles, because there will not be change unless people who are from diverse backgrounds will be in those roles that implement the policies and laws that are responsible for tackling DEI issues. And in addition to that, I feel like with us being represented, we're breaking the stigma that veterinary medicine isn't considered a successful career for Asians, where we typically have kind of the model minority myth, which is in and of itself a bad thing, which we're going to do a talk about that in about a month. So feel free to tune into that. But how the model minority myth is just perpetuating the stereotype that Asians have to be perfect at everything and that Asians don't need as much help, because that trickles into veterinary school, where if an Asian is failing a class, they're less likely to seek out tutoring or any sort of help because they feel like they should be better. So kind of creating that representation, also advocating for our members. So if our members are facing microaggressions and they're speaking out about it, we should be able to contact the institutions in which they are getting faced with those things and show that, okay, this is why this is not correct. And this is why you need to do better as an institution for these individuals. And finally, I think that the mentorship that we provide is really big, and that it allows us to tailor mentorship specifically for people with similar backgrounds. So something that we've done in the AAVMP is we've created a directory of a bunch of veterinarians, veterinary technicians, mental health professionals in general for the profession, and put them in a database where you can kind of find one in your area, see if you can contact them and be able to create a relationship there. We also always advocate for Possibilities VetMed, which is a mentorship platform that allows people to connect together. So I'm also part of that as a mentor. And that's where you can find personalized mentorship in that situation. And just in general, making sure that we are there and a support system for our members, that we provide education and we provide new resources and things. So scholarships are a big thing, that we finally receive sponsorships. So we're able to provide those and help our Asians in VetMed be able to move forward in a better and more stable way. And then actually, finally, is fellowship, where we kind of collaborate with other organizations. So I mentioned Possibilities VetMed, the Multicultural Veterinary Medical Association. Pride VMC has been amazing in our journey, helping us kind of establish ourselves. And Black DVM Network, LVMA, all of those organizations have been absolutely incredible. Wivaldi. So it's an amazing thing to see all of these people coming together for DEI. So that's kind of what I hope that we tackle slowly, is those core values that we have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as you touched on too in that question earlier on too, mentorship is a huge thing. And just having a person who's going through it or has some experience with that can really make a difference with you then feeling accepted in this profession. And then too, with kind of seeing that interconnectivity of all these different organizations is incredible. And it's something I think that at least our generation kind of veterinary professionals are starting to see more of, which is exciting. And I hope that that just continues to grow too. And yes, it might be slow, but as long as we're moving forward, that's all that we can ask for, at least. So
exactly. I think that the pandemic, as annoying as it has been and tragic, it's helped us kind of collaborate better, because Zoom has allowed us from all over the world connect with each other. So I would have never met my co-founder. I still haven't met any of my co-founders or board of directors in person, but you know, hopefully soon, as things start to get a little bit better, we'll be able to meet each other finally. And we hope soon to be able to go to a conference like VMX or anything there, and trying to show face there for all of the people who have been so important on this journey.
Yeah. And that just shows how even more incredible you guys are for doing it all without even meeting each other.
Yeah.
Well, good. So obviously you have done these phenomenal things in veterinary medicine already, and you are about to tackle emergency medicine and be even phenomenal in that. And I know you'll continue this inspiration for other veterinary professionals, just like you have inspired me, to make sure that everyone is represented and that there is an equal voice in veterinary medicine. So I always like to ask my guests, is there anything that you would like to leave off, any last thoughts or advice that you'd like to share before signing off?
I think that for me, I want people to know that Asians in general are doing so much work in the field, are trying to make our impact in different aspects of veterinary medicine. So there isn't one specific niche for us to be, and that you should, no matter what society is telling you, always reach out for help, regardless of what background you have. So if you need that help, there are organizations and resources to do that. And finally, teach people to pronounce your name properly. I still suck at that all the time. Half the people at my university don't pronounce my name properly, and I've just kind of accepted it, and I still struggle every single day with it. But your name is your name. It means something, and always try to advocate for yourself there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much again. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on, and I'm sure everyone listening will learn a lot from this and have these resources too. We'll make sure we include links for your organization and some of the organizations you were talking about too in our show notes, so people have a way to connect that. And then if people want to, would they be able to contact you if they have any further questions?
Yeah, of course. I'll send our Instagram, our Facebook, and our email to you so that you can link any of that.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, that would be great. Well, thank you again. And hopefully we'll celebrate DEI and continue to spread the word and make it an important part of veterinary medicine as we move forward here.
Amazing. And thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you everyone for listening in, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. For updates on upcoming episodes and additional information on all things wildlife, zoo, aquatic, and exotics, follow us on Instagram at walkonthewildside_vetpodcast, like us on Facebook, or visit our website. If you liked what you heard, we'd love for you to give us a great rating on your podcasting platform. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us through our social media pages or by email at walkonthewildsidepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you again for tuning in, and I hope you join us for the next episode of A Walk on the Wild Side.